This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
Our first question comes from Nigel Edwards, who wrote in wondering how a photon would experience the passage of time as it travelled through the universe. For example, a photon emitted by a star 100,000 light years away from Earth would take 100,000 years to get to us, from our perspective, but would the photon see that journey as instantaneous?
So the big answer to the question is that yes, a photon does not experience time. As far as a photon is concerned, every journey is instantaneous no matter what it does. So the questions that come out from that are why and so what? So as to why, you may have been told or you may be familiar that with the idea that nothing can go at the speed of light if it's got mass. That's not quite true. Actually, you are going at the speed of light right now. But you are going at the speed of light not in space, but in time. You are travelling forward in time at the speed of light. When something moves in space, that sort of changes the angle at which it's moving in the sort of space-time axis, so that the more you move in space, the less you're moving in time. And a photon is moving so fast in space that it's not moving at all in time. That's a fairly heuristic picture, or a fairly first-pass picture of what's going on, but the maths that back that up are really map to that very, very closely. The consequence is also very interesting, and it is that if we see anything changing, we know that it has mass. So if something is changing, that means time is passing for it, and that in turn means that it's not going at the speed of light, and therefore it must have some mass. And we use this fact to determine that, for example, neutrinos had to have some mass. When we saw them mutating from one form of neutrino to another, that meant that time had to be passing for them, otherwise they couldn't change, and that meant they must have some kind of mass. So this fact is not only kind of interesting and has a good theoretical backdrop, it's also got some very important consequences for sort of the everyday physicist as well.
Wow, that's really interesting. Thanks, Joe. Our second question comes from Margaret Feaster in Tallahassee, Florida. And she asks an apparently simple question, but with quite far-reaching consequences. Does the Earth's wobble affect the Moon's orbit?
So yes, this is a deceptively hard question, and it's a job for Enrico Fermi. So as well as being a pioneer of nuclear and quantum physics, Enrico Fermi was a proponent of what we now call Fermi estimation, which is trying to estimate quite hard numbers, not super accurately, just to within a factor of 10 or so. So when you don't have time to kind of work out the exact details of something and whether real physics is really very hard, you get a rough idea of something by remembering approximate numbers and doing what my university lecturer called skillful lying to simplify your life. So that's approximating things so they nicely cancel out. So let's do that now to try and work out roughly what kind of effect the Earth's wobble would have on the Moon's orbit. Well, the Earth's wobble, or the Chandler wobble, which is the change in the direction that the Earth is rotating, the axis around which it's rotating, is about 10 metres on the Earth's surface. So the kind of, if you imagine just the Earth itself wobbling and around its own axis, the tip of the Earth would change about 10 metres. Now, what's that? That's about 10 metres on the Earth's surface. What we can remember is that the Earth's radius is about 6 million metres, and that's just from the definition of what a metre is, incidentally. So let's lie skillfully to simplify our life and say that imagine that Chandler wobble is just 6 metres. So we've got 6 metres of wobble and the Earth's radius is 6 million metres. So that tells us that the Chandler wobble is about 1 part in a million. So that's a handy kind of approximate number we can keep in our heads. So the next bit is, what does this 1 part in a million wobble do to the Moon? Well, you can imagine from the symmetry, or you can see from the symmetry, that if the Earth was a perfect sphere, this would have no effect whatsoever. The sphere would just be the same. No matter how you rotate a sphere, it looks as it's the same shape, so it wouldn't matter if the Earth was a sphere. But the Earth is not a sphere, it's flattened. It's an oblate spheroid. It's squashed down at the poles. And that tells us that we have to consider something a little bit more complicated. And this flattening is the whole reason why the Earth's orbital dynamics are so interesting in the first place. So when we have a shape like a situation like that, that means we have to go beyond sine and cosine, which would be the things we'd have to care about for spheres, and up to the next kind of order in the expansion, which is sine of 2 times an angle and cosine of 2 times an angle. So if we're dealing with a system with that kind of symmetry now, and if everything was perfectly symmetric, then we would care about either just cosine 2 theta or just sine 2 theta. But we're not, because we know that the Earth's angle is a little bit off from the Moon's orbit anyway, so it's going to be a mix of those two things. And that's handy. So the last step in our game is what's called a Taylor expansion. So that's saying, what happens when you make a small change to a quantity? How mathematically, how much does a function or a quantity change when you change its components a very, very small amount? In that case, the Taylor expansion for sine 2 theta, which is the angle between the Moon and the Earth's orbital inclination axis, sine 2 theta, Taylor expands to 2 theta. So that means when you change theta a little bit, the sine of 2 theta changes by about 2 theta. So that means that the change in kind of effect on the lunar orbit will be about 2 parts per million, because we had 1 part per million for the effect, so 2 times that is 2 parts per million. So, for example, the lunar distance, or the distance to the Moon on average, is about 400 million metres. So we expect this wobble to have an effect of about 800 metres. So that's 2 parts per million times 400 million. So that's a kind of surprisingly large effect for a wobble this size, which I guess you can expect from given how big the Earth's, the Earth's mass is and the Earth's squashedness is.
Yeah, wow, that's a great example of Fermi estimation and a really interesting answer to that, so thanks, Jack. Finally, our last question is from Peter Conway, who asks, how do gravitational slingshots work to accelerate space probes as they pass the planets? He also asks, why isn't the speed that they gain from gravity as they approach the planet lost as they pull away from it?
Yes, so what is a gravitational slingshot? So a gravitational slingshot is an orbital manoeuvre that we use to accelerate spacecraft to get them to the outer solar system. So it would take loads of fuel to get things to the outer solar system if we just went there directly. So we sort of cheat by stealing energy from the inner planets to get there. So the idea of a slingshot is that a spacecraft approaches a planet, zooms in pretty close to it and gets swung around by gravity and goes back roughly the direction it came back in, but hopefully with some more speed. Now, what Peter's asking is absolutely right. If you imagine a planet just sitting there in space and the spaceship coming towards it and spinning round again, surely the energy it's gained when it comes in as it speeds up is just lost when it goes out again. And that's absolutely correct in the frame of reference of the planet. So if what you care about is the speed of the spacecraft compared to the planet, then you are in trouble because you can't gain or lose anything with a slingshot. But that's not what we care about, because we want to reach the outer solar system. So what we care about is our speed with respect to the sun. Unfortunately, the planet is moving with respect to the sun as it just orbits the sun. So because the planet is moving as our spaceship comes towards it, the symmetry is broken, and the spacecraft gains energy from the planet's orbit around the sun. So it steals energy and slows the planet down very, 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 very slightly as it comes out the back.